let me just go on to what has been happening. Nick was saying, who would have thought it a few months ago that we'd been in this situation where Jeremy Corbyn is leader of the Labour Party, and God help us, I'm Shadow Chancellor. And if you'd have asked us, when we lost that election, as Nick said, when we lost that election, to be frank, that Friday morning, we were despondent, absolutely despondent. We thought we had a larger party or a small majority, a Labour government again. And it might not be everything that we wanted in terms of Labour government, it certainly would have been an advance from what was in power and also an advance from past Labour governments too. So we were despondent. And some of you will know, we convened a meeting, there was a big demand then for the leadership election to have a left candidate. And I convened all these meetings of the left organisations in the Labour Party to say there was no way, one, we would get a left candidate on the ballot paper. And there was no way that we would win the leadership election. I'm the sort of Nostradamus of the election. And what happened is that from pressure from rank and file members, there was a demand for a candidate. And even if it was just to put the argument for a few weeks, let's have a left candidate. So we convened a meeting, you know possibly this story, I convened a meeting with the campaign group. There was me, Diane Abbott, and Jeremy, Michael Michel, God bless his soul, there as well. And we went round the table and said, all right, we're going to have to run a candidate, we accept that, someone's going to have to do it. And I said, look, I've done it a couple of times, and a couple of years ago, I've done my bit, thank you very much. Diane Abbott tried the last time as well, and then Jeremy's at the end of the table, literally, and we just said, look, Jeremy, it's your turn. And he said, look, and he said, go on then. I was talking to Ted about this before. That's the sort of leader I want. I've had enough of you. I've had enough of people who simply want to get into a position to aggrandize themselves. I want someone you force into the position. Or, actually force into the position. What then happened? As you know, I became the chair of this campaign committee. We put a group of volunteers together, we had no money, nothing like that. And we started on the campaign trail. And I started booking rooms around the country so that we could argue for our policies. And I was booking rooms for at maximum sort of 100 people. And I thought, don't worry, we'll take a few chairs away so it looks full up. And the first meetings he turns up to, we booked for 100 and 500 people. He goes on to state where it gets worse. He goes on the first TV hustings in Nuneaton. He came across incredibly well by just being Jeremy. The thing about Jeremy Corbyn, we chose the slogan, honest politics, straight talking, because with Jeremy Corbyn, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And he's just always has been. In fact, it gets it into trouble at times, but that's the way it is. So we then booked rooms for 500 and 1,000. And it went on like that all around the country. It was absolutely staggering. I don't know, some of you may have been at the Camden one at the Bidborough Centre. It was a couple of thousand and filled the street outside. We had to get the FBU fire engine. And he had to address from the top of the fire engine the whole street packed out. And there's a great film of two young kids breaking into the hall for a political meeting. Now, what the they're not breaking out, they're coming from a window to get in. And it was just tremendous. And what we discovered, basically, is Jeremy went along, and the meetings were about public engagement, they were about people raising the issues of concern to them. And what we found is a whole new generation of young people turned up, people of all generations coming along, but particularly young people. They were raising issues, they wanted to come up with the problems that they were facing, and they were raising their own solutions as well. And it was really, really engagement. It wasn't just big rallies, it was people having their say as well. And it was remarkable. It was remarkable. People raising issues, in London in particular, about housing, about desperate housing need. In my constituency, I have people out the beds in sheds for Northern. And during the general election, I went around photographing. We've got shanties being set up in my constituency. I have people sleeping along the canal. And we've reinvented the back to back, where the front of the house is rented and the back of the house is rented to a separate family as well. And I thought that was just my patch of London because we're under the pressures of Heathrow Airport, etc. It's right way across. It isn't just in London. It's right way across the country as well, the housing pressures that people are facing. So as people came along, raised the housing issue, and the solution is simple, isn't it? Build council houses again. You know, if we've got housing... If we can't build fast enough, quickly enough, we know right way across the country there are 700,000 empty properties. 300,000 of those have been standing empty for more than 6 months. That, I think, an empty property when a family's homeless is a crime. Yeah. And again, what we're saying is, as some councils have been able to exercise their powers of taking over empty properties and putting families in, that's what should be the norm. And in London in particular, the issue is high rents. People can't afford it. Someone mentioned the rent. The average rent for a couple of bedroom property in my area is in between £1,400 and £1,600 a month. Almost just not affordable for most people anymore. So the solution is very straightforward. Rent controls. We used to have fair rent controls. Someone mentioned Sadiq's campaign. Sadiq is pioneering ideas around rent control and look at the options for it in London now, and linking that to wage levels as well. And that used to happen. People think this is a radical invention. You know, I've been reading up the Little Red Book again or something like that. You know? It's common right the way across Europe. Rent controls are common across Europe because it's a way in which you ensure the housing supply, of course, is developed, but also whilst you develop the housing supply, you enable people to have a decent roof over their heads. You know, students turned up about what was happening in terms of debt as a result of tuition fees. And to be frank, we've argued time and time again, education is not a product to be bought and sold. No. It's not a commodity. It's a gift from one generation to another. As a result, it should be free. That's why we said when we get back into government, we'll scrap tuition fees. Now, what's interesting on the CSR, the Comprehensive Spending Review, the other week, what Osborne did is he froze the thresholds in a retrospective way back down to 2012, the level at which you start paying. That's putting on top for the average student now, that's going to put on top of how much they've paid back, anything between another £3,000 and £6,000. And he celebrated that he was introducing loans for master's degrees. But if you do get that loan for a master's degree, once you've done your first degree, you have to start paying for it concurrently. So it just adds on to the existing loan and you pay that much more. And what that means, to be frank, if you want to stay on in education, do your first degree and your second degree, and you want to be, for example, a lecturer or whatever, it basically means you're in debt and it's significant for the rest of your life. But what it also means for a lot of working class kids, they'll never become university lecturers. They'll never be able to stay the course to do that. And what does that mean? A greater inequality, a lack of social justice within our society. People were coming along with those sorts of proposals. People, NHS workers flocked to the meetings that we did around the country, and they were explaining what was happening in terms of pressure of work. And we saw it from the junior doctors dispute, just what the hours they work still and the pressure that they're under. Young teachers coming along. We're now in a massive teacher shortage problem. Why? It isn't just the wages, it's the pressure of work upon those teachers. All the targets, all the pressure that they get on. It's making good teachers, committed teachers, feel as though they're failures just because they're not meeting that target this time around. And also, if you look at what's happening with the cuts, class sizes are increasing again. Again, putting the pressure on the teachers themselves. And in both the public services in terms of education and health, the reality is you have to invest. You have to put the money in, pay the decent wages, recruit the staff, and in that way you retain them as well. And the argument that was coming forward, well, where does the money come from? Well, actually, it's very, very simple. You just take the last budget that Osborne introduced. It's interesting what he did. At the same time he was cutting tax credits, he was introducing a cut in inheritance tax. So when he was introducing, when he's cutting the tax credits, he was going about to load upon ordinary people an extra, £1,600 at one point, cut a year.